elevated androgens, in particular testosterone, frequently seen with PCOS can lead to something called hirsutism, which is where you have excess hair growth, primarily on the face, neck, upper lip, and chin, but it can include the full body. Women with PCOS often find that they have thick, long, coarse hair around the chest, toes, and definitely more prone to hairier legs, hairy underarms, as well as even the lower abdomen. It can be really frustrating to keep these areas trimmed, waxed, shaved, or otherwise manicured. So in this episode, we are going to talk all about laser hair removal, but I'll also touch on other options for removing unwanted hair from the body so that you can have smooth, stubble-free skin whenever you want it.
You're listening to the PCOS Repair Podcast, where we explore the ins and outs of PCOS and how to repair the imbalances in your hormones naturally with a little medical help sprinkled in. Hi, I'm Ashleen Korchek, and with many years of medical and personal experience with polycystic ovarian syndrome, it is my joy to watch women reverse their PCOS as they learn to nourish their body in a whole new way. With the power of our beliefs, our mindset, and our environment, and the understanding of our genetics, we can heal at the root cause.
Welcome back to the PCOS Repair Podcast, where today we are going to be talking about having hair-free, smooth skin and all the considerations that you want to make and have in the back of your mind when you're considering laser hair removal. So let's go ahead and get started by talking about some of the other ways that you could remove hair, because when it comes to PCOS, not all areas of the body need to be treated the same way, both for budgetary reasons, as well for various types of hair, amounts of hair, like surface area of the body that needs to be treated for certain sections. So it's good to have a good idea of all the different options that you have for removing unwanted hair. And I know this episode seems to be airing at a weird time, if you think about it, because most of us want to be more hair-free in the summer. But when it comes to laser hair removal right now, which this episode will be airing in mid-fall, right now is the time to make your consult and get your treatment started, because it takes about 5 treatments to get the results that you want, as well as you may need some touch-ups. And every treatment is about every 4 to 6 weeks. So it takes a little while to get to where you want to be. So if you're considering laser hair removal, this is the time of year to do it. Plus, it's usually easier to get in for an appointment because a lot of people scramble at the last minute, thinking about it more mid-spring. And so now's the time to get a jump on that. All right, so let's first start talking about removing unwanted hair by shaving. So shaving, of course, is a great option for larger surface area of the body, such as the legs. It's inexpensive, it's easy and available because you can do it yourself in the comfort of your own home. And so for this reason, shaving is a really good option, especially for places where in a pinch, you don't really mind that it has a little bit of hair on it because you can always cover it with clothing, like put your jeans on for the day. If you're like me and you have really thick, coarse hair that goes all the way up your legs, which is very common with PCOS, and it tends to grow back really quickly. This makes shaving the most tedious of all the hair removal options in that it has to be kept up very regularly. I have had so many of my body areas treated with laser hair removal, and we'll get to that. But I remember prior to having laser treatments, I felt like my ankles had a 5 o'clock shadow, which was really annoying if I had anywhere that I was going in the evening, like an evening event. And so for me, laser hair removal was such a life-changing event. Then also when it comes to shaving, I've had so many patients ask me about this, and I just want to say it is a myth that has been propagated by I don't know who, but when it comes to shaving, it does not cause hair to grow back thicker. Can I say that again? Shaving does not cause your hair to get thicker. It is not affecting the root. It is not changing your hair follicle. But it can have that illusion for a couple reasons, and I think this is why that myth has gotten started. One, when we start to shave something other than our legs, so our legs were usually probably pretty hairy to start with, but this is really something where people will start to like shave their mustache and then they feel like their mustache came in darker. So typically the reason people will start shaving their mustache is because they noticed more hair growth. But why? Did we ask that question? Remember, we always have to ask that question. Why? Why am I seeing darker hair on my upper lip? So for women with PCOS, the answer is probably that you've had hormone imbalance long enough that you're starting to see some of the results of it. And you're just getting started with that. And so if you start shaving it, it's continuing to worsen. And it has nothing to do with you shaving it. It has to do with the hormone imbalance. So until you get the hormones balanced, you're going to continue to see the problem worsening, shaving or not shaving. The other thing is that when you have a long unshaved hair, the end is tapered and finer, as well as it tends to get bleached out and lighter at the tip. When you shave that hair and it starts to grow, you see a very dark section that is close to the root, sticking up very prominently and bluntly cut, so it is as visible can be, and so it can look like it came in a lot darker. But if you think about like growing a hair, it's a little bit like an elongated teardrop, and so the end is a lot finer, which is kind of what we see because it's at the end, it's what's sticking up, as compared to the root, which is a lot thicker and darker. So it has nothing to do with the shaving. It has everything to do with either the hormone imbalances of continuing to increase hair to a certain area that you may not want hair, as well as when you shave, it does exaggerate the appearance of the hair, which is why you may need to continue shaving, or if that's coming back too quickly, as discussed prior, you may want to move on to other options, which we will talk about next. Next up, waxing. So this can be done either at home or at a salon, and the benefit is that the results last longer. The reason is because you're pulling it out by the root of the hair. Having the results last longer can be really helpful if you're trying to remove hair between the eyebrows or the bikini line, because you're not going to get as much stubble, which can become very irritated or have all of those little red bumps, and so you're going to have more time with a smooth appearance rather than having some irritation. You can still get some irritation right at the beginning, but at least you're going to have a period of time, a series of days in between treatments where you have hair-free, smooth skin as compared to always having little stubble and 5 o'clock shadow appearance. Now, some people are very sensitive to waxing, and so that is not the case, but it is something that some people can get away without as much irritation, and they have that nice smooth skin for longer with waxing. The downside is that it can be very uncomfortable, especially depending on the size or area of the body that you're having waxed. Plus, it's a lot more expensive than shaving, and it's not permanent. So you're spending a lot more time and energy on it. Even if it's not quite as frequent that you're having to do it, you're still spending a fair amount of time having to make an appointment, go to an appointment, have a treatment, and then it still grows back, plus a lot of extra money. So it can be great for certain areas, but again, it's not permanent. Another similar option to waxing is something called sugaring. It's a very similar procedure, but some people find that it's less irritating. And so if you have sensitive skin to waxing, it may be something that you want to ask about at your local salons if they do sugaring instead of waxing. Unlike shaving, waxing can alter hair growth because in this instance, you are actually pulling out the root of the hair. So for this reason, you may want to keep an eye on what's happening in the areas that you're frequently waxing or repeatedly waxing. Although I would expect a decrease over time, you just want to keep an eye on it. And this is especially maybe a concern in areas like the eyebrows, where as you're shaping them with waxing, you also don't want to overthin them. And so unless they're being careful to go in the same place every time, you may over time start to get kind of over-tweezed, or in this case, over-waxed eyebrows. So then similar to waxing in that you're removing the hair root is plucking. While this is clearly not a good option for larger body areas like the legs, it can be a great option for the random stray hair on the chin or between the brows. And it's something that, again, you can easily and inexpensively do at home. Then there's chemical ways of removing unwanted hair. These would include products such as Nair or other similar brands. Now, these ones I do not recommend. The reason is that many people have come to my office with chemical reactions and even burns from these. I have used them myself, and while it is very tempting to do because of the low cost, you can use them at home in the comfort of your own home, and they have a very similar result and lasting time to waxing, but I just don't like them. There's a lot of reasons, but one of them is just they can cause the skin irritation, reaction, allergic reaction, burns, etc. Plus, they smell horrid, and to get that smell off of your skin, you oftentimes have to use a lot of other scented soaps, and so the amount of toxic chemicals that you're putting all over your body over and over to remove your hair, it starts to kind of concern me a little bit. Plus, it's just there are so many other options. And I also found that when I did it, some of the hairs removed extremely well, but there was always just like these little patches and it was just kind of fussy. And again, I don't like the toxic chemicals, so I don't recommend that one, but it is an option. So those are some of the very common ways of removing unwanted hair. Now, I know there's always new methods coming available, being introduced to the market and being advertised. The new ways may or may not be helpful, but these are some of the long-tested mainstream ones that a lot of people are familiar with and may have tried or been interested in trying. So I wanted to at least touch on all of those before we talk about laser hair removal. So in regards to a more permanent hair removal option, there is either laser hair removal or electrolysis. And I get asked a lot about what is the difference between the two. So both of them are permanent, but the FDA says that electrolysis is a permanent removal of the hair and that laser hair removal is a permanent reduction. The biggest difference is that as you're going over the body with laser hair removal is less precise, whereas with electrolysis, you're literally grabbing and treating each individual hair. So it tends to be more precise. I think the numbers meet the criteria for permanent removal versus permanent reduction. In the end result, they're both doing the same thing. They're both sending in a little electric current down and killing the hair at the root. But some lasers do a better job of that than others. So that's one thing. And so you want to check and see which lasers meet that criteria. But it's also a little bit more random if every hair was treated. So you're going to see more of a reduction as compared to a full removal of the area. So kind of semantics there. They both work very similar in their technology. The method of treatment is a little bit different, leading to, again, that different terminology of what the FDA claims or allows them to claim. However, big caveat here, you are a living person and your body can create new hair follicles, or your current hair follicles can thicken and darken in just the way that they did before due to unbalanced hormones. And so where a laser may have skipped over them because they weren't as dark, they can over time darken and then they show up more. So if you only take away one thing from this episode is that your hormone balance, which we talk about a lot here on the PCOS Repair Podcast, plays a big role in the worsening and ability to treat unwanted hair. Along those lines, I cannot keep track of how many women that I have diagnosed with PCOS because they came to me for laser hair removal. While I did eventually treat most of them, I recommended that they got their hormones tested first. And if they did test positive for PCOS, then we would talk about lifestyle adjustments to get those hormones under better control so that they could get the long-term lasting results that they wanted from their laser hair removal treatments. If you go to a med spa or a plastic surgery office, any reputable laser establishment, you may get an excellent treatment. But if they don't realize how important it is to be aware of someone who might have PCOS or see the warning signs of someone that has PCOS, then you may not get the long-lasting results that you were wanting. So my conversation with patients would go something like this. They would come in for a consultation for laser, usually for unwanted hair on the face or upper lip or chin and neck areas. And that just would just kind of, that light bulb would go off that maybe something was going on because most women don't have excess hair in those areas. There are some nationalities that are prone to it. But anytime I saw that on a consultation, I at least would consider and make sure that I was not treating someone who had undiagnosed PCOS. Well, oftentimes these women were perfect candidates as far as their hair color, thickness of hair, skin color for laser hair removal. I would let them know that they were a good candidate, but I wanted to do some testing first. I would order them some lab work. I would have them follow up. We may even do a few test spots with the laser, but I would have them follow up before we started any real treatment. And we would go over their lab results. If they showed any indication of PCOS, I would have them follow up with their primary care doctor or their gynecologist, because I was in dermatology at the time. And so I wasn't going to treat the entirety of their PCOS, but I would let them know that, look, this was something that we found and you're going to want to get that more under control with lifestyle changes so that your hormones are truly balanced and not just masked with a birth control pill. And then you're going to be so much more satisfied with your treatment. So the good news is that hair growth, Hirsutism is extremely responsive to lifestyle changes, as women who have followed my recommendations not only did great with their laser results, but they also saw the long-lasting results that they wanted. So yes, if you have PCOS, a laser will work on you. The problem is that after your 5 to 8 treatments are done, over the next year, you're going to start to see hair return. And that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons that there are mixed reviews on whether or not laser hair removal is helpful for women with PCOS. Women with PCOS are one of the largest groups of people that want laser hair removal for certain areas of the face and neck. But without your hormones being balanced, you're not going to see it work long term. And so here you were promised permanent reduction of hair, and a year later, here it comes back. So that's really important to note. And hopefully your provider is taking note of that and helping you with that prior to treating you for laser hair removal. But if they're not, now you know what you need to do alongside or before you start any sort of laser hair removal treatments. So what is the biggest difference between laser hair removal and electrolysis? So like I said, they have a very similar technology, but laser hair removal is using a headpiece that treats, depending on the laser, about a 1-inch square. And so that will cover somewhere in the 20-ish, 30-ish hairs, depending on how thick and close together the hair follicles are in that area. Whereas electrolysis treats each individual hair one at a time. You actually grasp onto the hair follicle and then send the treatment down to the root of the hair. So as you can see, electrolysis might be excellent for small areas of treatment, whereas laser hair removal can significantly speed up the process so that it can be used on larger surface areas, such as the legs. The downside of laser hair removal is that you do need to carefully select hair color and skin color. The laser is recognizing darker pigmentation because you're not actually grasping onto the hair. So the laser is looking for dark pigment, and that's its target for treatment. For this reason, the best candidates are going to be lighter skinned with darker, thicker hair. And then although there are many lasers that can treat different skin colors, it does have that limitation. Whereas for electrolysis, it really doesn't matter what color the hair is or what color the skin tone is, because you just grasp the hair and it just follows the hair shaft down to the hair root. And so you don't have to worry about picking out that pigment contrast that you do with a laser hair removal device. So then we talked about whether or not they were permanent and kind of how the FDA words that and allows places to word that. And that comes back into play when you start thinking about where do you want to have your treatment performed. So the biggest consideration I would make is what type of laser does the facility have? And then, of course, is your technician, do they know what they're doing? But if they don't have a good instrument to start with, it really doesn't matter how great of a technician they are. If they're using a laser that's not really that great at removing hair, it's too multi-purpose, it does all sorts of other anti-aging things as well, then you're just not going to get that good result. And that's where the FDA has only approved certain lasers to have permanent reduction of hair. So what I highly recommend is to stay away from IPL lasers. These are typically used for all sorts of skin treatments. And yes, they actually do reduce hair. So I know this firsthand because one of the PAs I used to work with, he loved getting IPLs, but then he started noticing that his facial hair was thinning and it wasn't permanent. It slowly grew back over a couple of years, but it does thin the hair and it didn't come back in quite as thick as it had before. So it will thin hair, but you're not going to have that clean, no hair, bare, smooth skin that you're looking for when you think about laser hair removal. It's just going to give you a reduction of hair. And so the treatment of an IPL is going to be a little underwhelming. Even if you start to see improvement early on overall, the lasting results of it just aren't going to be as good. So because there are so many different lasers, I would just ask when you make an appointment, what lasers do you have available for use of laser hair removal? And then when you go in for your consultation, ask them what one they would recommend for you. Make sure you look those ones up. The manufacturer of the laser's website, they should put on there whether or not it has been FDA approved for permanent hair reduction. Look into it, make sure that it is one of the primary reasons that people use it is for laser hair removal. It's not just an, oh yeah, and it kind of works for laser hair removal too, because that's where a lot of lasers are, is these multi-purpose, because it's less expensive for the facility to have a laser that does many things rather than is the best for a certain purpose. And I think this is another big reason why there are so many mixed reviews of whether or not laser hair removal works well, is because there's such a variance across the industry of what lasers are being used. And then, of course, there's the efficacy of treatment. Each office is going to have their own protocol of how they go about deciding how to treat and what settings to choose. And this is a little bit tricky because lasers are high powered. They have the potential of creating all sorts of problems, burns, damage, and so forth if used inappropriately. And so some offices will shy away from going very strong. At the same time, if you're not going strong enough, you're not going to have a permanent reduction in hair. So you have to know that sweet spot that comes from understanding the skin types, what level and settings that you can put the laser on for those skin types. And I usually did test spots. So I would have a patient when they came in for their consultation, we would do test spots based on the ballpark of where I felt like their skin tone and hair type warranted on the settings of the laser. And then if they had any irritation or if they had no irritation, it was a really good indicator of if I could bump it up a little bit or if I needed to bump it down or keep it where it was. And this was all within a cautious margin. You know, I wasn't going super strong, and you don't want anyone that's going to go super strong just to see if they can. But at the same time, someone who's being too timid with the settings on the laser is charging you without giving you a good treatment. So it's kind of finding that sweet zone. Also, some patients have very sensitive skin, and so they'll turn really bright red and they'll kind of almost get like little hives while you're treating them, and that clears up within like 5 minutes. Other people have a lot more irritation and truly do need the lasers to be turned down and possibly have just more treatments to get the results that they want. So doing little test spots helps the technician to know where they need to be on their settings, helps them to fine tune it to the client that they have in front of them, and ultimately will result in you getting a better treatment because the way the hair cycles work. So basically your hair grows in these cycles and the cycle finishes out and a new hair cycle grows in about every 4 to 5 weeks and maybe 3 to 5 weeks, but we don't know exactly, but it's kind of where that transition point between cycle of hair growth occurs is somewhere right around average of 4 weeks, which is why we recommend treatments being done every 4 to 6 weeks to get that next cycle. So if we are wanting to get the best results for our client, we want to hit each cycle really well. If it takes us like 3 treatments to really narrow in on where the best settings is for that particular client, then we've already treated 3 hair cycles and now we're kind of doing what you would call a touch-up. And touch-ups are going to have a variety of hair in different hair cycles coming in because we've already treated a fair amount of the hair and it's a lot more difficult to get as good of a result. But again, safety first, always safety first. And you don't want someone who's going to be too aggressive, but someone who's going to be overly cautious, maybe because they just don't have enough experience to really give you that more permanent reduction in hair loss. So just things to consider when you're visiting their consultation. And so while there isn't like a direct recommendation of where to go or how to pick where you have laser hair removal, looking at what lasers they have available, how your technician or care provider is going through and deciding how they're going to treat you, all of those are going to give you a really good idea of, is this the right place for me to be getting my treatment? Ultimately, it comes down to a gut feeling, but this gives you some considerations to take with you when you go to your consultation. And then you have some responsibility in the results as well. Make sure that you're telling your technician what results you're seeing. There are so many things that they can't see once you leave the office that you need to let them know. How is it working? Is it not working? If and where you're having any irritation, if and where you're having a less pronounced hair reduction than you think you should, and maybe that area isn't getting as good of a treatment or areas got missed, these are all things that you want to let them know each treatment. Don't wait until you've had like 5 treatments and then be like, oh, well, it never really seemed like any of the hair fell out. They can't see what happens in the 4 to 5 weeks or maybe 6 weeks between your treatments. And so they rely on you to tell them this kind of important information to help you get the best treatment possible. All right, so now let's talk about how would you prepare for a laser hair removal. Everyone's going to give you slightly different instructions. Follow the instructions of the location that you choose to have your treatment done at. But here are a few things that I would recommend. Really important that you don't remove hair by plucking or waxing about 4 weeks prior to you having any laser hair removal treatment. You can't treat a hair that's not there, and so we need to make sure that all the hairs in that cycle have an opportunity to be there. So only shaving between and before laser hair removal treatments. And then prior to your laser hair removal appointment, you're going to want to make sure that you have shaved the area nicely. Before a consult, you may want to do that a couple days in advance so that they can actually see what's there. But before a treatment appointment, you're going to want to shave maybe the evening before, depending on what time your appointment is and how fast your hair grows. The ideal is that you can see the little black pigment in the hair. So maybe if you like ran your hand over the skin, you would slightly feel a little bit of a raised hair follicle there, but barely. Mostly that you just want to be able to see it. Any hair that's too long is actually going to distract the laser, and the laser will just burn the hair that's sticking above the skin instead of going all the way down to the root of the hair and treating the root follicle, which is where you're going to get the permanent reduction. And then, of course, just as a side note, electrolysis would be very different from that. You actually need to have enough hair there to grab onto. So you're going to want to follow instructions for electrolysis completely different than what I just told you about barely having any hair above the skin. And then what should you expect from a laser hair treatment? Like what happens afterwards? So immediately following your treatment, you are likely to feel a little bit sensitive around the area treated. It might feel a little bit tingly or burning, similar to a slight sunburn. Expect there to be a little bit of red inflammation around each of the hair follicles, and the hair follicles themselves can be thicker looking and darker because they've been singed, and they can almost look like they've kind of puffed up a little bit. But over the next couple of days, your body's going to eject those little dead treated hair follicles and they're going to disappear. The redness will calm down, and for a couple of weeks, you're going to have this nice smooth skin without any hair or stubble remaining until that next cycle of hair starts to grow in. So typically the time frame of this is the little hair follicles that were treated are going to fall out over about 2 to 4 days, and then you're going to have about 2 to 3 weeks with clean, hair-free skin. And then at about, 3 to 4 weeks after your treatment, you're really going to start to see that next hair cycle grow in. And that should align with that about 4 to 6 week next treatment timeframe so that you get that next hair cycle during your next treatment. Most people are thought to have about 4 to 5 hair cycles, and that's why you're going to need at least 4 to 5 treatments to really see a good reduction in hair growth. You're going to space those about 6 weeks apart. For larger surface areas, I always recommend it to my patients closer to 8 treatments. I think that there's just so many little tiny hairs that it just kind of needs those extra treatments. And some people have more hair cycles and some people just need those extra treatments. And so plan on, when you see the pricing, plan on doing up to 8 treatments. If you need less, then you can always be happily surprised that you only needed 5. Because of the hair cycles, you're also going to want to commit to staying on schedule with your treatment. Check with the office and make sure, especially right now, I feel like everyone is so busy and overbooked that you want to check and make sure you don't need to schedule several appointments out so that you can stay right on that hair schedule. Otherwise, you're going to be kind of off and you're going to be retreating kind of touch-up hairs and missing all of the really good hairs that are in the prime of when they need to be treated to get rid of them. And then the last question that I get asked a lot about laser hair removal is, what about at-home laser removal devices? Okay, so I know it seems super tempting. The cost of a home laser device is so much less, and once you've bought it, you can do as many areas of the body as you want. The problem is that because laser hair removal can be dangerous, because a laser can cause a burn, in order to have it available as an over-the-counter option for individuals who have not been trained, the lasers are definitely not going to be as strong. So here's what I recommend. I recommend going to a doctor's office and that you have been recommended or that has a good reputation or that you feel good about, or all of the above, and they're going to do a much better job at getting at least those first 5 treatments in. So I really recommend getting at least 5 to 6 or up to 8 treatments. And then if you want to get an at-home device, it can be really helpful, especially with PCOS, because you are going to have some areas that have a little bit of regrowth. And so now knowing all of this about the hair cycles of how often you would want to treat, and you have to follow the at-home removal device instructions, because some of them say you have to treat like once a week, because again, they're not as strong. And so they have a whole way of treating it themselves. But having this knowledge of the hair cycles and everything, you can go through and spot treat. Because I'm kind of at that place where now, where after having 3 kids and going through various hormone fluctuations over the last 20 years, the laser hair removal that I had in high school, I have a couple patches here and there, but I don't want to pay for full legs again just to get rid of the couple little patches that have come back. And so I have been tempted to go ahead and get a at-home laser removal device. If I do, of course, I'll keep you all posted. But for now, what I would say is go somewhere where they can really treat the hair that you don't want, and then consider an at-home laser device for touch-ups or areas that you would not go and have someone else treat. Why not treat those yourself if you've already bought an at-home laser device? But it also, just in other thought, is that it's not comfortable. And so it kind of feels like a rubber band snapping you. And so having someone else do it for you and being able to kind of zone out is really helpful, because while you can numb small areas, you cannot numb large areas. There's a toxicity that you can get from numbing too large of areas. It can cause blood cell problems and cause a whole lot of health problems with that. And it can be dangerous. So you can only use numbing cream on small areas at a time. And so it can be uncomfortable if you have a high pain tolerance. Doing it to yourself may not be a big deal, but if you do not have a super high pain tolerance, you may find it even hard to do for yourself. So then you've bought this at-home laser device that you really can't even use because it's just too uncomfortable. Well, there you have it, friend. Everything that you need to know about laser hair removal and dealing with unwanted hair when you have PCOS. I hope you have found this episode helpful. If you have, I hope you subscribe to the PCOS Repair Podcast so that you get notified each week when a new PCOS health topic becomes available. And if you have any further questions about this episode or any of the other episodes of the PCOS Repair Podcast, I would love to have you contact me over on Instagram at @nourishtohealthy, and we can continue this conversation further. Until next time, bye for now.
Did you know that studies of PCOS epigenetics have shown that our environment can either worsen or completely reverse our PCOS symptoms? I believe that although PCOS makes us sensitive to our environment, it also makes us powerful. When we learn what our body needs and commit to providing those needs, not only do we gain back our health, but we grow in power just by showing up for ourselves. This is why I've created a guide for you to get started. My PCOS Fertility Meal Guide can be found in the show notes below. I want to show you how to create an environment that promotes healing while still being able to live a life that you enjoy. This guide is completely free, so go get your copy now so that you can step into the vision that you have for your life and for your health.